I finally saw Star Wars, and I'm going to talk about it with Ken Campbell on this Crummy Little Podcast.
Ken Campbell, one of the judges of the Geeky Awards over the last couple of years, and Star Wars aficionado, thank you for rejoining this Crummy Little Podcast.
Thanks for having me back, Jim. Appreciate it.
I feel like we should have started this with like an opening crawl. You know, just...
Like,
it is a dark time.
It is a dark time in the winter of Virginia.
Now it's starting to sound like a Civil War letter. Dearest Mildred.
My darling Ruth.
I have finally seen Star Wars.
Would that this cruel war would be over so that I may too find out what is up with that BB-8 droid.
Now that you don't have to worry about spoiling anything for me, Campbell, what did you think about this movie?
Like I said last time that you were kind enough to have me on the show, when we did the spoiler-free version, I absolutely loved it. I thought it was fantastic, and I believe I said that anybody who's a fan would go into this movie and come out happy. And so I'm turning the question back around on you, because I know that you were a fan. Did you come out happy?
I came out very happy. I thought it was a good, you know, 2 hours plus of fan service, but not fan service in a bad way. It hit the right notes that you'd want a Star Wars movie to hit. A lot of callbacks, but really that's kind of what Star Wars fans have been looking for. Maybe a better way to put it is this. It seemed like the prequels were the story that George Lucas wanted to tell, and this movie was the story that fans wanted to hear.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, and that was when, if you saw the George Lucas interview that he did with, I think it was Charlie Rose, you know, and he said, like, that he wasn't, you know, he couldn't watch it. It was hard for him to watch or whatever. He referred to it like a relationship. When you break up with someone, you just kind of have to move on. You can't be driving past their house. And I could see where he was coming from, but it's almost like, wow, man, didn't you, like, understand, like, that's what people loved about it. They didn't love the intricacies of intergalactic politics. They loved the fact that, dude, this guy's got a freaking laser sword and he's slicing up people. And then this other guy, he's got a blaster and he's shooting people in the face. And then this other guy is all in black and he's really cool, but he's got a lightsaber too, and he's gonna fight the other guy. Like, yeah, we might be dumb, but we like what we like. And the idea of the callbacks, I crash coursed the original trilogy before I went in to see it, so it was all really fresh in my mind. And there were so many little things thrown in there that for fans of the original trilogy, you saw, even to down to, like, there's at one point where one of the bad guys rattles off a number. And it's the number of the cell block that Princess Leia was in the first one. You know what I mean? Like
FN-2187.
Yeah, it's that kind of stuff. Like, it's just like, oh wow.
You know it's funny. I went to see it with my wife, who's not a Star Wars fan or hasn't been a Star Wars fan. And I was, so the whole time I'm kind of like, okay, you know how when you watch a movie with that you know you're going to enjoy with someone who, and you're not really sure if you're going to enjoy it, if they're going to enjoy it.
You kind of do that thing where you're kind of like half turned, like looking at them like, huh?
Yeah.
Do you see?
Yeah, like,
do you see?
Side eyeing. It's like,
yeah.
But she has since become a fan of, and she kind of, after she saw the movie, she said, I kind of want to know more about this. And so we're starting to watch now the first six movies, Machete Order, and as I'm sitting there watching, we were watching the episode 4, and I heard them say 2187. I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
that was Finn's number. So, yeah.
There's a 2187. There's the mouse droid that pops up. There is there's just – and I'm blanking on a couple of them now. Oh, there's the scene where they go to the temple and to get all of the – exposition from the CGI exposition lady. There's banners on the temple, on the building, and one of them is the Mandalorian symbol, best known off of Boba Fett's armor. And then if you look real close for a second, the flags from Phantom Menace that were being carried out in front of the pod race you know, the 40-minute pod race scene, these guys came out with these big giant flags. Some of those flags are in that scene up on the thing. There's just all these little like touches. But I mean, if just starting off the top with that firefight, I thought that was incredible because we've never seen stormtroopers actually be effective. You know, in the first movie, they kill a bunch of Jawas off screen. They kill Beru and Uncle Owen off screen. And then every time they have a firefight, it's a joke. They can't hit anything. And so for the first time, you see the stormtroopers come down and in a movie and really kind of like, oh my gosh, these are bad dudes. Like, they're not fighting other soldiers. They're shooting women and children. And I'm not counting the prequels at all. I'm just talking about the original trilogy. You know, you see them in Hoth and they're fighting other soldiers. And okay, that's one thing. And then they get their ass kicked in the third one by a bunch of teddy bears. And now they're swooping in and they're going. And I thought it was really, really cool the way that J.J. Abrams used the visuals to tell the story without a single line being spoken by Finn. You know everything that's going on in his head. And visually, they made it really easy because as his friend is dying, he reaches up with his bloody hand and smears his helmet. And so now you know, oh, okay, the guy with the bloody helmet, that's the guy we're looking at. And so you see him, and I think it's one of those amazing things in film where you can convey so much without actually saying anything. You see that he's hesitant. You see that he's looking around going, what am I doing? I can't do this. Which, you know, doesn't prevent him from later on in the movie just stabbing people in the stomach with a lightsaber. But when it comes to shooting women and children in a desert, he has some reservations with that.
You mentioned Abrams. It seems like he's able to introduce some new images, some new elements. And the first one that I saw was Kylo Ren going nuts, losing control.
Yeah, and when he lost control, and I thought that was interesting because when we met Darth Vader back in the day, he was ultimate badass. He was just cool, and even when he got angry, he focused his anger. And whoever made him angry, he force-choked. Whereas when Kylo Ren's angry, he smashes stuff. We haven't seen someone that powerful lose their mind and just go nuts. And he does. And I think it plays like scary. Like you're like, oh, this guy is super unstable, has some serious issues, and he is super, super dangerous.
And he's capable of anything.
Yeah. Which, you know, that's a matter of some debate if you're referring to the fact that the guy kills his own father. There's a couple theories I have on that. One of them, maybe he's capable of everything, but maybe not for the reasons you might think. But I also think that it was very clever to use it as also sort of a source of levity in a way, because there's that scene where he's having his second tantrum. And the stormtroopers are walking by, and they see stuff flying out of the room, and they're like, yeah, you know what? We're going to go the other way.
That was actually, when I saw that scene, I said, this is someone who grew up with Star Wars. For me, growing up with Star Wars, part of it was always that it was so ridiculous and wacky. It was so ripe for parody. Things like Spaceballs, things like the Family Guy takeoffs. Muppet Babies did one.
I was going to bring that one up, because that was for some reason, which I don't know why, but I mean, come on, Disney, you own the Muppets, you got the Star Wars. Why isn't that being re-released or redone? Like, that was a fun one. I remember that.
Yeah, that was my favorite. I mean, not like I was a super huge Muppet Babies fan, but when that thing was on, when that Star Wars episode was on, I was watching it. I wanted to see them blow up the tomato.
Oh yeah, when they blow up the tomato. And I must have seen that probably like 40 or 50 times. You know, at least until my Blu-ray player stopped working. But it's one of those – it's just those parodies, and then, of course, the holiday special, which
which was oddly enough not a parody.
Which was not so not a parody, and yet remains the most bizarrely funny thing I've ever seen connected with Star Wars. But if you've ever seen – actually, you know who I think – and I'm wondering if this is part of the reason because they also own Marvel, and Marvel is now publishing the Star Wars comic books. But I believe Dark Horse was the original publisher, and but maybe Marvel got the rights to it. Maybe Marvel published it. There was a very I think it was two or three issues, miniseries called Tag and Bink, and it was following these two stormtroopers around during the events of Star Wars. So like they're sort of in the background of certain things, and it's a very lighthearted, funny comic book. And all I could think of when those two guys rounded the corner and Kylo Ren's having his tantrum, and they're like, no, never mind, let's go the other way. Like, all I could think of is, like, I wonder if those were Tag and Bink. Like, just, yeah. You know, like, or whatever the version is. And all I could think of is Tag and Bink when I saw that scene.
But, I mean, it shows that you can enjoy this, still have a laugh at it, and still take it seriously. And I thought that was the scene, not like I wasn't won over at that point, but I would say like that was the scene where I said, okay, this is the type of Star Wars movie that I would make.
Well, and you just mentioned the fact that you weren't won over. You were already won over by that. But at what point did you kind of like relax and go, oh, okay, we're in good hands? Because I know like when I saw it, and I saw it the Thursday before it opened, like not a midnight show, I saw it earlier Thursday, and I remember as soon as the title hit and that John Williams score hit, the theater started clapping and cheering. And then the crawl came up, and then we go into Jakku. And I will say this, during that fight scene, as cool as that scene was, I was not sold yet. Not the first time. Especially when they capture Poe Dameron and they bring him in front of Kylo Ren, and Kylo Ren's visage is certainly intimidating. You don't know what's going to happen. We just saw him stop a laser bolt in midair, a blaster bolt just stops it in midair, and we've never seen anybody do something like that. And Poe Dameron's like, do I talk? Do you talk? Like, that line, for whatever reason, just struck me as off. If I'm facing a guy who literally just stopped a blaster bolt in midair, I think I'm going to be like, I'm sorry, when I wet myself, did it splash on your boots? Like, I just don't think that that's going to be the first thing out of his mouth. I wasn't sold until Rey. Ray's the one that sold me. So my question is, when were you sold? When were you like, oh, yeah, I got this is going to be good. I got this.
You know, I don't know. I think I kind of went into the theater thinking I was going to be okay with this.
Okay. No, that's fine. I mean
– I'll tell you what. It was the second – to be honest with me, it was kind of the second trailer, and you mentioned Ray, and it was a little bit that. You know, there's that second trailer that's released where it's just a piano key –
yeah,
striking. You see your scavenging.
Is that I think that's the international trailer, the one they released in Japan first.
I think so, but it's, you know, the first thing you see is her with the goggles and the face covering.
Yeah, and you hear Maz. You hear Maz, or as I call her, CGI exposition lady, explaining to her, like, you know, you think you're nobody, but you're not, and all that stuff. Yeah.
When I saw some of those images, I said, this looks like an interesting movie. I was interested in the story. I was interested in the mystery behind everybody going into it. So even that first line from Poe Dameron, I was kind of that you mentioned the, you know, him.
Do I talk first? Do you talk first? How's this go?
Right. What I call the Han Solo.
Thank you. That's exactly why I kind of like jumped, like kind of recoiled that, because I was like, I know Han Solo. I served with Han Solo. You, sir, are no Han Solo. Like, that's what I wanted to yell, but I didn't.
But see, I enjoyed that because there were actually three lines. Now that you mention it, there were two lines that I had written down, but that one I'd forgotten about. There was that one. There was when they're escaping from the Star Destroyer, and he says something like, "Okay, we're doing this," And then there is an actual Han Solo line where he says, where, you know, Han at one point turns to Finn and says, "That's not how the Force works."
Yes, I do remember that line.
And all
that one I laughed at. That one I and not so much at the line, but at the delivery of like I could just picture Harrison Ford, you know, he's 70 something years old, and he's like, "I gotta do this." Okay. You know, and just having to get up the energy for that scene. I just laughed at that. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, and he also had another line where they're trying to figure out how to take down the Starkiller base, and he goes, "Oh, we could blow it up. We can always do that." You
know? And
it was lines like that which were maybe not the best lines, but they were delivered pretty well. They were believably delivered. We talked a little bit about comic relief in the prequels
being done poorly with Jar Jar and stuff like that.
Right, and you know, the kind of the cartoonish adventures of the droids and things like that. But in this one, where you had Han Solo barter with the bounty hunters who are not bounty hunters, but the smugglers who were boarding his ship, you know, things like that.
One group from Scotland, and the other group from Japan, which I thought that was a little interesting. So even in a galaxy far, far away, they've got guys from Edinburgh.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a far flung clan, I guess. but it was.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our nerf herders.
But they but they little lines like that were especially well done to kind of weave into the.
I really liked, actually, speaking of that scene with the smugglers, I really liked that scene because it did harken back to that. Oh yeah, that's right. Han Solo is not really a white knight. Like he does some stuff.
Not very good at his job.
No, and he wasn't. I mean, that's why Jabba put a price on his head.
Smuggler who dumped his cargo, owes money, gets a payment, somehow can't transfer the money.
Well, you know, like, you know how hard it is with those limits on those ATMs.
Well, they communicate across the galaxy with holograms, but they can't figure out a way to wire that, and therefore
it's really, 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 really Western Union.
And by the way, you know, you joked earlier about the Empire getting brought down by teddy bears. You know, the rebellion was almost eaten by teddy bears. Like, if Luke Skywalker hadn't showed up at the rendezvous point in Return of the Jedi, Han Solo is the Ewok's lunch. So if you're – now, how many times have you seen the 7? I've seen it once.
I have seen it twice.
Upon the second viewing, was there anything that you saw that was kind of – that stood out that maybe you had missed, like a detail that you'd missed the first time?
There was definitely a detail I missed the first time, and I think the cool thing about this movie is the very last scene where Rey, who we really haven't talked about much, but I think she is such a cool character and such an amazing character and really is going to be the heart of this next trilogy, I think, more so than Finn. I think Finn is kind of going to play sort of the second fiddle to Rey. And she goes to the planet to find Luke Skywalker. I mean, the whole movie is – the MacGuffin of the whole movie is we got to find Luke Skywalker. And they find Luke Skywalker, and she presents him with a lightsaber. Not just any lightsaber, his lightsaber. And not the one he had, not the green one from Jedi. The blue one that the last time we saw was tumbling into the clouds of Bespin, along with his hand. The internet is abuzz with talk of, like, well, maybe she's related to Luke, and that's why the whole thing, that's why the lightsaber is calling to. But one thing I if that's the case, I still think it works, but I have a different theory. I don't think she's related to Luke. I think she's related to Obi-Wan Kenobi, because something I missed in the first time I saw it was when she is at Maz's bar. And they are – she's going down into the catacombs to find the lightsaber. She has this force vision. It's very similar to what happens in the swamp to Luke when he goes into the cave there, except much – you know, the effects are much better. You hear a voice call Ray. That voice is Alec Guinness. So the voice you hear calling Ray's name in that scene is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Now, and you could maybe make the argument, well, you know, Obi-Wan reached out from beyond the grave to Luke, but that's because he had a connection to Luke. You know, he trained Luke, kind of, you know, and he's, if you look at the prequels, he's known Luke all Luke's life. He was there at his birth. But what's her connection to Rey? What's her connection to this presumably orphan who grew up abandoned on Jakku? What's the connection? So I wouldn't be surprised if we find out that there's more of a connection between Obi-Wan and Rey than there is between Rey and Luke Skywalker. And I missed that completely the first time. The first time I thought it was just a voice. And the second time I saw it, I was like, oh, wait a second. And I think it's because I had just crashed through all the original trilogy, that voice, Alec Guinness's voice, was still in my head.
It's certainly circular if it ends up becoming, because you can kind of see the plot arc bending towards her and Kylo Ren having their showdown. Even from the very beginning, Ren is very interested in the fact that they heard about some girl escaping from Jakku.
But yeah, and it's one of those, is it just because he thinks she might have the droid, or is it because of the girl? And you don't really know, and I don't think they really answer that, because even when he captures her and says, don't worry about the droid, we don't need her, we don't need the droid, we have her. You're right. I mean, it's not really clear. Is it just because she's seen it, or is it something else? Maybe something we don't know yet.
But by the way, I'll tell you one thing. One of the things that made me really get excited about this movie is when there's a scene when a couple of bad guys try to get the droid from her, and she's fighting them off, and Finn is trying to help her. They're still on Jakku, and it's right before the Empire rolls up and
And
Finn gets knocked on his ass, and she comes over, and Finn asks, are you all right? And she just gives him this look like,
I'm not the one who got my ass kicked, Junior.
Just the look. It was a subtle look, but I was just like, that is really, really funny.
That's the That's the scene that got me, because I was like, all right, we're good. We're okay. Because that whole thing with Rey, I was, you know, you watch her, and she's a scavenger, and, you know, she's underfed because – the junkyard guy isn't giving her enough money, or not money, but enough food for the scraps. You know, last week it was this, and this week it's that. And she finds this droid, and she could eat for months on what she could have got, but for some whatever reason, she kept him. And so you get this, I totally was like, oh, I'm in. I want to know all about her. I want to know what's going on. I want to know why she's carving, she's obviously keeping track of time. What is she keeping track of time for? Why is she by herself? Like, all this stuff. And then, yeah, Finn comes in, and he's going to be the big man to the rescue. But before he even gets there, she's already, you know, kicked the hell out of two guys trying to kidnap the droid BB-8. She beats him up. And then when it's not so much that the bad guys are after Finn, it's the fact that she's after Finn because the droid sees her, and she chases him down, beats him up, and then the Empire attacks and they have to run. He grabs her hand, and she's like, why are you grabbing my hand? And she keeps saying that, like, let go of me. Like, I don't need your help. And I just thought, like, at that point, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm in. This is going to be a good show.
Watching episode 4 again, one of the things that, you know, that you'd see but you don't really remember, but after seeing this movie, was the scene where they bust Princess Leia out of the
detention totally takes control of that situation.
She's like, you guys don't know what you're doing. You can't rescue yourselves. We're into the garbage chute, flyboy. Like, let's go.
Yeah, and the best – the cool thing about going back and watching that is, like, you see how tough Princess Leia was. Here's a woman who literally, like, she was obviously quite young, She's royalty. She's an ambassador. Or a senator, rather. She's a, you know, a politician, a seasoned politician. And standing up, everyone else is terrified of Darth Vader, and she looks right in his face. And she's like, oh, yeah, you. I should have known. She's tough.
And also, conversation between Princess or General Leia Organa and Rey at the end puts this movie as a one of the ones that passes the Bechdel test.
Yeah, I heard that, and I actually had to. And this is my own ignorance showing. Was like I had heard that there was something about that, like, you know, the, out there about how, like, in film, women on screen are always talking about men, and that there was some sort of thing, but I didn't know what it was called. And yeah. So when I saw some review that mentioned that, the Bechdel test, and I had to go, like, you know, Wikipedia that real fast and be like, oh, yeah, you know what? And it's one of those things you never really think about.
Yeah, I learned about it in a webcomic, so I'm
– Yeah.
Like it was anything that I was like, oh, yes, this is an important social movement. Well, hey, you mentioned you have some theories. You already talked about one about Rey being a Kenobi.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps, really... or some Kenobi adjacent.
Perhaps.
Look, Tatooine, desert planet, Jakku, desert planet, old hermit out in the desert. Maybe he got some strange with some sand people.
That would explain why Ben Kenobi's always avoiding the sand people in the first place.
He's avoiding child support, basically.
Like, oh, they're sand people, but you've got the Force. Like, no, we don't want to.
No, we don't want to mess them down. Their lawyers are really tough.
Jedi mind trick doesn't work on a summons. What's that? Nothing. So we see at the end Kylo Ren, the big reveal of it, the thing that I think everybody knew was coming, but
they put that out on Front Street pretty quick, that Kylo Ren is actually not Kylo Ren. His real name is Ben Solo, the son of Han Solo and Leia Organa. And this is where I had alluded to in the spoiler-free edition of this, that anybody who watched or rather read the extended universe, the novels, would go like, oh, okay. Because in the novels, Han and Leia have three kids, two twins, or rather a set of twins, and then another younger son. The twins both are, well, actually all three of them, Force sensitive and do undertake Jedi training, and the boy twin ends up turning to the dark side. And this is where the sort of those theories mesh, because, you know, sort of a spoiler alert, I guess, at the end of those extended universe novels, his sister kills him in a lightsaber duel.
And of course, in this one, Ben Solo kills Han Solo.
Mm-hmm. That scene, I think everybody except probably the 5-year-old kid who was in one of the screenings, who immediately after the Han's body tumbles into the chasm, all you could hear was this little kid going, "What happened? What happened?" But he had been doing that the entire movie anyway, so we all kind of ignored him. I think everybody knew exactly what was going to happen. When it happened, it was sad for me because I loved Han Solo's character. But it was also, it made sense. Like, story-wise, it made sense. You have to have, going back to that hero's journey, which I talked about the last time, if you look at, okay, you got the hero. In the first one, it's Luke. In this one, it's Rey, who gets introduced by an older character to this magical world. In the first one, it's Obi-Wan. In this one, it's Han Solo. Han Solo went from going, you know, ancient weapons and hokey religions aren't a match for a good blaster at your side, to explaining the Force to Finn in that that's not how the Force works. You know, he's obviously come a long way. And he played the Obi-Wan role. Obi-Wan dies in the first one, but Han's going to die in this one. And the fact that there was that relationship between Han and Ben, I think, makes it even more poignant for fans. I don't think, though, this is where we get into my theory, I don't think that Kylo killing Han is him killing Han because Snoke, the real big bad guy who you see CGI throughout the film a couple times, wants him to, and that's the only way he will complete his conversion to the dark side, or however he wants to say it. I think when Kylo is saying, I have to do this, but I don't think I'm strong enough, all of us in the audience thought, well, he's talking about he's suckering Han in. He's trying to say, like, oh, I want to go good, but I don't think I'm strong enough. Will you help me? I don't think that that's exactly what it was. I think what it was is, I want to go good, but I'm not strong enough to break away unless I can really get in with Snoke. I need you to help me. Will you do something for me? And basically, will you die so that I can get in with Snoke? I don't think that Kylo Ren just kills his father out of a fit of fury, because I think if he had, he wouldn't have had that emotion. I think he just would have flat out went after him. I also think it's the reason why Chewbacca doesn't shoot him, at least doesn't shoot him and kill him. Chewbacca, who is got a weapon with a scope on it, could have had a headshot, could have taken him out right then and there, but instead hits him in the side. You know, he misses him, basically. I don't think Chewbacca wants to kill a guy, a person that he's known literally all his life. You know, if you think about it, Chewbacca was probably there when Kylo Ren was born. He was probably Uncle Chewie.
The image of Han rushing Leia into the space hospital and like Chewie behind him with like scrubs.
Chewbacca was the doula. That's what I'm saying.
And he had he'd have like the video camera. It's like, get that thing away! I don't want it.
Oh man.
So here we are. We've got Han Solo dead. We just found Luke Skywalker. You, Ken Campbell, when you go see the next one in December of 2017, what are you going to be looking for from the next Star Wars movie?
I want to see an empire. I want to see, because one of the things I don't think they did as well in this one as they did in the 4 was flesh out what's up with this First Order. Like, what are they doing? Like, in the first – in A New Hope, like, you kind of understood, like, oh, okay, that's the government, and, you know, government bad, yeah, okay, we get that, like, fascist overthrow government, whatever, we get that, but it's clear that this isn't, the First Order isn't the government, because there's the New Republic. This seems like it's somewhere on the fringes of space, like, sort of on the edge. So what are they? Where are they getting all this weaponry, which is not just leftover stuff from the Empire. This is some pretty cutting edge stuff. I mean, in the books and in the video games, there's stuff that can stop lightsabers, but we've never seen it on film. And now we have a stormtrooper armed with a weapon, looks like a riot baton, that can stop a lightsaber. Like, clearly there's some R&D going into this. Where's that coming from? I also really want to know what happened to Captain Phasma.
She's in the next movie, right? She's signed up to be in the next movie.
Right, and I think that I still hold out hope for Boba Fett. I think that if you really want people to go nuts, the last scene of the next one is a scene with Boba Fett. And people will just go absolutely out of their minds. And I want Poe to be a little bit more... I want him to be a little less maverick and a little more, Raymond, not Raymond, but Tom Cruise's character in Rain Man. I want him to be a little bit more, I want to know more about him, like, it's as far as, like, what's his story. I don't think we're going to get all the answers to all the questions about Rey and Luke or Kylo Ren. And I wonder what role Leia will play. I wonder what they have, if anything. Is she going to still be doing this? Or is it going to be kind of like one scene where she mourns? That was something I thought was missing. There's no funeral for Han. There's nothing. All you see is the scene where Leia clearly knows it's happened. She collapses. Chewie flips out, but there's no funeral or any kind of recognition that Han Solo, former general, former hero of the rebellion, is dead.
Should at least be an all-staff email.
You would think, you know, there'll be coffee in the break room or something like that, but nothing. I don't know. I just thought that was a little strange.
Hey, one question I wanted to make sure that I asked you before we got out of here, because as someone who's been a fan and watched all seven movies now, at what point do you think, like at some point, Luke and Chewbacca had to figure out that they both knew Yoda, right?
I'll have to go back and check out things, but I don't think that Luke ever says or talks about Master Yoda in front of Chewbacca.
This is true, not on screen.
And the thing of it is that apparently what happens after, you know, in the interim years between Jedi and The Force Awakens is Luke starts a school. Now, you would imagine that he's not going to start the school down the street from Han, Leia, and Chewie. He's probably going to go, and in the books, he goes back to Yavin and establishes the school there. And from the way that Han was speaking about Luke in the scene where the star map, I don't think they've actually hung out a lot. So it's not like they're just sitting around, you know, the Sabacc table talking about all the weird little green aliens they ever met in their entire lives.
Well, but in Return of the Jedi, when Han comes out of the carbonite freezing, Chewie's getting him up to speed and tells him that Luke's been training as a Jedi Knight. So I've got to assume that there's some kind of, like, conversation.
I had this guy ride around my back for 6 weeks, made me pick up rocks in my mind.
And at that point, Chewbacca has to go, like, oh, wait, like, Yoda Samson or whatever his last name is? Like, Major Piggyback? I know that guy. I totally know that guy. So we've gone full circle.
I think so.
Well, I'm excited about for the next one. And hey, I'm also excited. I don't have to wait all that time to hear your voice because you've got a new project starting up, right?
I do, actually. And it's going to be coming out probably right around the time that this comes out. You'll be able to subscribe on iTunes to my podcast, that I co-host with my friend Michael O'Rourke, and it's called Dirty Politics, and it is not about Star Wars, and it's not really about geeky things, but you can be geeky in all sorts of things, and one of the things I'm geeky about is history and politics, and it's sort of a grown-up conversation between two friends on the opposite ends of the political spectrum. One's a lawyer, one's a historian, and sometimes we curse a lot. And it's going to be coming out this week, at least to subscribe. So if you go on iTunes, it should be on there under Dirty Politics Podcast. You can check us out on Twitter at Dirty Paul Pod, all together at Dirty Paul Pod. We are at dirtypoliticspod.com. For those of you that get your podcast through the website. And we're on Facebook. If you search Dirty Politics Podcast, we should come up on Facebook. So reach out, give a like, subscribe, and if you like what you hear, let us know. If you don't like what you hear, let us know too.
If you don't like what you hear, just keep it to yourself. No one needs to hear your venom.
We're really excited, and it's a lot of fun, and we've been talking about it for a while, so we're actually really excited to be able to get it off the ground and launch. So hopefully at some point, Jim, you'll be able to come on and talk about some of the other stuff that's going on here on this planet and not on one in a galaxy far, far away.
That's a good segue to the end. That's Geeky Awards judge Ken Campbell and co-host of the Dirty Politics Podcast. Ken, thanks for talking Star Wars on this crummy little podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Jim. It's always fun.
Thanks for listening this and every week. You can follow the Crummy Little Podcast online at crummylittlepodcast.com. You can find us on iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review. And you can, of course, follow me on Twitter at Jim Eltringham. Thanks again for listening in. Well, that's disturbing.